Welcome to the Football Historian Podcast.
By all means, enjoy it.
He will go right to the very top.
Dos, tres, cuatro times.
Here we go, Germans.
I will turn these results round.
All right, that's good manners.
There's animosity, but there's no fight.
You can't beat them, join them.
How do you make me feel sick if I look at you?
No, I want to fight here.
But don't drink, don't sleep with women, don't drive fast cars.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit too!
Hello everyone, this is the Football Historian Podcast. I'm going to say it's probably officially episode one, although we've done a little bit of prep yesterday. This is the first unsuspecting guest who has walked through the back of my house in the rain there. He fell over on his way in.
But slippy floor.
That's it. Just get you on your toes before we start. But this, for anyone who doesn't know, is Chris Pajak, Mr. Redmen TV, Mr. Blood Red, I believe also another name, but obviously also... know a thing or two about football, which is why we're here today. So thank you very much.
Apparently so, yeah. I'm not sure that's quite right, but yeah, I do talk about football a lot. Yeah, whether I know anything about football is a little bit different.
Well, that's kind of the same here, but yeah. We're in too deep now, I think. But yeah, Redmen TV, just obviously, oh, I can't say this is similar because we're obviously nowhere near it, but similar in terms of we're now gathered in my garage trying to see how it works. So I just wanted to know how it came about, it you and Paula, were you mates before, or what was the thing?
Yeah, we've been mates since school. We went to, I don't know whether I should admit this, but we went to Bluecoat in Liverpool, the two of us. Now, this was back when Liverpool, the Bluecoat school in Liverpool, also you just got in on interview rather than exams. So I very much got in on sport at the time, and like not the brain type of thing, whereas nowadays I think you do have to get in through exams and stuff. And so we met in school, we became really good friends around the age of 16 when you start going out and drinking and all that, obviously illegally, so what. And then yeah, we'd stayed mates. Obviously we were best mates growing up through uni and everything. And then we just used to dick around on YouTube making stupid videos, to be honest with you, non-footy videos. That started in probably 2006, 2007, just messing around. We were both working in pubs and restaurants. And then Paul had this idea. He always wanted to do something. He had like a media degree from a university, which was Sheffield. I used to go up and see him all the time, and I forgot that one. And then, yeah, we started to just mess around. So 2007 was probably the idea for Redmen. So it was a good old while ago now, like
Athens, yeah, and all that.
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. And then Charlie, his girlfriend at the time, now wife, made us a banner. Which we've still got. Like, so we had this massive banner that used to sit behind us that said Redmen. It was literally a handmade banner by Charlie. And we did a pilot episode and actually took it to LFC TV. And LFC TV were like, oh yeah, we really like that. It was shit, by the way. They were just being nice, I think, at the time. But also their content was really bad at the time, and it's improved massively since, to be fair. And they were like, we really like it, but we just don't think it needs two presenters. So they basically X-factored us and wanted to split us up. And if anyone can guess which presenter they wanted to keep, you'll probably think it was Paul, and you'd be absolutely right. And it was all scripted, to be honest with you, to begin with. Like, Then we parked it for a couple of years, and then we just decided, you know what, let's just go and do it, because YouTube started in around 2006, but it was all cat videos and stuff like that at the time. Yeah. It wasn't really something, and then we were just like, let's just try something different. Let's just try and do a sort of sketch show. A comedy sketch show is how Redmen started. So our first videos were in 2010, and it was like a balloon keep you up World Cup. I don't know if it's still on the channel. If it is, I apologise. It is god awful. It's me, Paul, and his cousin Neil playing balloon keep you ups and having a World Cup of it and pretending to be different countries.
You did that in your quiz, didn't you?
It's terrible. Yeah, definitely. It's terrible. And I got a lot of stick in that in the quiz and stuff. So yeah, that's how it kind of started. And then we've been going about a year. I think we managed somehow 5,000 people had subbed to us on YouTube. And we were like, all right, okay, well, let's get a loan out and let's start a website and let's try and see if we can do this full time. And, you know, it was obviously a labour of love, but we wanted to do it full time instead of the shit jobs that we were doing. So we decided to, I got a loan out, paid for a website after somehow convincing my wife to let me get a loan out and do this. We built a website, and that took a long time, to be honest, because back then Netflix wasn't in the UK. Right. Netflix came into the UK in 2012, I think. Streaming services didn't really exist. when we launched ours.
The ones wanting to pay for it, basically.
Yeah. So, like, I've said this loads of times over the years, we ripped our terms and conditions from Love Film, which was the DVD postal service, which is just insane because nothing existed like us. And I think there are probably remnants of the Love Film terms and conditions on our website now, even today.
What's your returns policy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Honestly, but do you remember Love Film?
Well, only like the advert and that.
Yeah, you used to post the DVD and then you post it back. And I used to be a member of it. Like, so me and my wife used to get the DVDs and stuff. And so I was like, oh, I'll just rip their terms and conditions. So I built the website. But then even finding someone to build a website was dead hard because it was essentially only porn that you could subscribe to in 2011. Nothing existed, so you had to go find someone who'd done a porn website pretty much in the end.
Do you know many?
Loads now. Loads now. They've all stayed mates. And like, so we found this, and with the other thing is we wanted it to be a local business, so we found someone in St. Helens. They hadn't done a porn thing, but they thought they could do it, so they coded us a website. No, definitely not porn, definitely just Red Men. Although some of that earlier content was a bit risque, certainly not to be seen nowadays. So we started this sort of website, and then like we were like, okay, well, we'll go subscription. And we went subscription and it was £2 a month. It was £2 a month for years and years, probably till about 2018, I think. And like 200 people signed up and we were like, oh God, I've got a big loan out here that is not going to cover the costs of this. This is never going to happen type of thing. And then just at the time, actually, the Anfield Rap launched just as we went behind the paywall in 2011. I think it was like September 2011. And this fucking podcast, they were absolutely brilliant launched. They were like, oh God, what have we done? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And so we carried on obviously doing stuff on YouTube and then it's just kind of grown organically from there. And it was, as I say, a scripted sort of sketch show, and it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. Like, funny enough, I was looking at some old videos recently, and for this Ireland live show that we're doing, pulling some videos up to basically embarrass us when we're on the tour, and I can't even watch them.
Yeah.
They're so bad, like, and we're basically acting and we're not actors. And then I don't know what point we were like, we're just gonna have to talk about the football here, this is shit. And then just
so was it Liverpool related?
It was Liverpool.
Like, were you just trying to be funny with a script before and like rehearsing it and all that and then recording?
Never rehearsed. Okay. Never rehearsed. What would happen is we'd record everything on a Monday for the entire week. So Paul, I was managing the tavern company on Smithdown Road, the restaurant there, and
breakfast.
It was when I was there, yeah, you're right. I was the one who won the best breakfast in the country twice, by the way. Thank you very much, everybody. You're welcome.
I brought you around earlier, yeah.
I also, you know, had the photograph taken for the Liverpool Echo, and the photographer turned around and was like, can I give you a piece of advice? I was like, go on, what? He's like, don't teapot in photos. I was like, okay, thank you very much. Like, so there is a picture of me in the Echo teapotting somewhere around the way after winning this award. And to be honest, even that I blagged. Like, we basically, what happened with that award, it was a public vote, right? So I didn't completely lie, but everybody else was doing it online, and I handed them out with a discount voucher afterwards for people to sign. And so we were behind every year, and then at the end, I'd been collating customers' like votes using discounts. Right, for 3 months before, and then we just post off bags and bags of these things, and we won it 2 years on the belt. They were good, and it changed hands now. It was a mad place to work. Anyway, Paul was working at the tavern with us, like 3 days a week. So Paul would basically sit there and edit, and back then it was so different to now. Like, we used to, our mate used to have a camera. He worked at Toxic TV, so he had a Sony camera, which we've still got in the studio, and he recorded onto tapes. And then what you'd have to do to get the tape to the computer was you'd have to then, obviously there was a piece of kit, you plug the tape in, you'd have to play the tape for the hour that you've recorded while the computer recorded what was being played, and then you'd have to manually edit it all together. So like, if we did a 4 or 5 hour recording session, there'd be 4 or 5 hours of just Paul sitting there waiting for tapes to record to the computers. It was crazy. And then he'd have to edit everything together afterwards. So that was like how we started out. And we, on a Monday night after I'd finished work, we'd go round. We'd wait probably normally 2 hours because our mate is the worst timekeeper you've ever met to turn up with his camera. Then we'd record until like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I'd quite often get a phone call that says, Chris, the audio's not recorded. We're going to have to do it again. So I'd go back at like 1 o'clock in the morning and we'd record some videos again. And that's basically how it started. I expect it's going to be exactly the same for you at
well,
some point.
Like we said before, yeah, we did one last night and it all went quite catastrophic. Well, not catastrophically, just unusably wrong. So yeah,
and that happens so many times.
Yeah, but when you started doing it, as you said, it was like, groundbreaking to do stuff like that because only love film and porn websites are similar to you. So you go into a family party and people saying, oh, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, I'm just doing this podcast and I'm doing this scripted show with me mate. Are people looking at you like you've got seven heads? Or,
yeah. Like now it's changed quite significantly, but like I always remember, like you go down to family parties and stuff, and some of my family are like incredibly clever and doing unbelievable jobs all around the world and stuff, and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm just kind of making YouTube videos about Liverpool. And I was working at the time as well, so but like, and then now it's like, oh no, I'm a YouTuber, and you feel like a little bit better about it. And it's a sad thing to say, but you do. But like 10 years ago I hated saying that, like, because people would just look at you like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
14-year-old girl,
yeah, exactly. So it's changed a bit now, like, obviously, but you know,
so how long did it take you then, sorry, just like from being working full time, working part, well, doing it around your work, sorry,
4 years,
and then just that was it. But then being comfortable enough to being happy, was it still 4 years then, or was it still like you were stressed?
No, we were enjoying it. Yeah, like obviously you do it because you enjoy doing it, and we got to meet loads of people. Like the first time we got to interview Rafa Benitez and stuff, like that was just like, and but the mad thing is with Rafa, we basically got in through Monts Benitez, which his wife had a foundation or something, didn't she, a charity. So we got in through the charity angle and Rafa was there, and we managed to wangle a few minutes to talk to him, and he was like, oh, I've seen you guys. I won't do his accent because I can't do accents.
Yeah, you didn't do it then.
I know. Oh, I've seen you guys. The lighting's terrible and the audio's shit. And we were like, oh, that's classic Rafa. That's what he does. He just criticizes whoever you are. So like Jamie Carragher coming off the fucking 88 minutes and you didn't do that right. He's like, yeah, but look at all the stuff that I did right. And so Rafa did that too. And we got Rafa by Rafa. Yeah. It was amazing.
Happy with it, So opportunities like that, that's amazing though, isn't it?
Yeah,
from being in your back room.
It was just stupid what we were doing. Like, and that's the thing, that like we were told we were the first fan channel in the world for any sport, any team. The head of sport at YouTube did that and told us that, and he took a real shine into us and he loved what we were doing. And in 2011 he made us a partner at YouTube, like a partnership scheme, and we were like, and he said to us, he got us down to London, he's like, this is the first in the world that's like this. What you're doing is mad. And then it wasn't until like probably like 13-14 when other channels really started to pop up. So I remember in 2012 Arsenal Fan TV launched. They were 2 years after us, and then like maybe 13-14 when you like to Goldbridge, and I can't remember the name of the Fremantle was the company. Joe Fremantle are, they are one of the biggest production companies in the world. They run X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and Pop Idol, and they do all this. They launched fan channels, so
obviously we're watching more
full-time Devils. The Manchester United one was a Fremantle thing, right. They had a Chelsea one, the ads, and a couple of others as well, and they tried to buy us, I think that was about 2014-2015, to add to their portfolio of these managed fan channels. And we had the meeting with them and they had a contract there and everything, and we were like, you've got to do this and this, and it was like a big old contract, and they took us out for lunch and all this type of stuff, and we were like, no,
just didn't feel right.
Right, mate. And he was like, what? Well, they thought we were stupid. Yeah. And we probably were, to be honest with you.
But that's,
no
you that's not why you did it, though. Exactly. So just to read.
And they tell you, you have to do this many videos a week, and this.
Yeah.
And we were like, nah, we're all right. And he's like, are you all right? I was like, not really, no, we can't afford nothing. But we don't want to do that. Exactly. And so I think in 2013, Paul went full time, to answer your question. 2014, I went full time. I took a 10 grand pay cut to go and do Red Men from what I was earning. Paul obviously was working part-time and kept himself working part-time so that he could do Red Men. So he was earning shit money. And we, you know, for the longest time, that's what it was. It was make enough to make ends meet, but enjoy your job. And I say job in inverted commas.
Well, that's why
that's what we did, and that's what we do.
Stupid old saying, and if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. And yeah, well, hopefully, I'm not saying we're anywhere near doing anything like that. But obviously, just in my writing stuff and stuff like that, it's what you try and do. It's why you do it, isn't it? And, you know, my missus is a teacher, and she's hating it and dropping out because it's all about what you want to do in life, and you want to try and do things that you enjoy. So hopefully we can be similar with that in the future. But yeah, we'll go to a quick break, if that's all right, and we'll come back with a longer chat with Chris. Are you looking for a Kazakhstani football team to support? Then I think FC Kemi is a team you should support. Do you agree?
Growing up as a child, I always had FC Kemi posters on my bedroom wall.
Well, and all the children of the Kazakhstani future will have FC Kemi posters on their wall, because FC Kemi is the team to support. And because of that, Tom has made us a chant that we're all going to follow. So,
up the Kemi, up the Kemi,
up the Kemi. Make sure you follow them on all the social medias, all the posts and all the things you should follow will appear below us right here. And you should be a supporter of FC Kemi.
Live, love, Kemi.
Welcome back. We're still here with Chris. Thanks for still being here.
No problem whatsoever. I tried to run away, but there's no room for me to literally get around the table and the chairs.
Table, maybe,
I could have, yeah, but your slippers are pretty big, to be fair. Homer Simpson ones are seen today. Thomas,
yeah.
That was fantastic.
Garage slippers,
I love it. Absolutely love it.
There's a pair for every room. Right, I wanted to ask about something that we just obviously had a quick chat about, and then just about Chelsea rent boys' comment. Obviously, it's not something easy to talk about. Even I don't even know how to ask a question about it. But I think, if just say from my side of it, I think I'm guessing that day that you said that you were one of 35,000 people who were saying it inside Anfield, which doesn't make it right. But the way it's blown up now is that you are the face of that chant, and whenever Liverpool fans accuse, or rightly accuse, people, other fans of saying stuff that gets used, say, well, you did it, look at this type thing. But what can you like explain what it is and your take on it, if that's okay?
Yeah, obviously Liverpool had just had a catastrophic game of football, and it doesn't really matter to me whether there was all of Anfield singing it. I was the one outside with a camera in my face, and I was the one who said what I said. Now, what I will also say is that what got clipped up made it look worse, if that's possible, because I wasn't calling Chelsea fans rent boys, and now I shouldn't have called Chelsea players rent boys either. But at the end of the clip, so what happened was, obviously what I said, the video went out, I think it had something ridiculous like 100,000 views in about 8 hours, which is just mega like views for what our content is and was and stuff. And so we then had somebody reach out to us from Liverpool Football Club, who had Kick It Out campaign, get in touch with Liverpool, and Liverpool then got in touch with us, and then at Kick It Out campaign then therefore got in touch directly with me. And while all this was happening, we just decided to take the video down. The video was on the end of an end card for another video which we'd forgotten about, and it was like 7 seconds long or something like that. And that 7 second clip didn't have from Mourinho down to, was it Torres, I think, was playing for them at the time, which ended the clip with me saying from Mourinho to Torres end, rather than Chelsea fans, which is how it came across in that clip. Yeah. That then got clipped up and put on Vine, which was huge back then. It was like a 7 second video thing, and then it just got turned into all kinds of memes with me dancing and all kinds of mad shit. Like,
yeah. So what are you thinking then when that's doing it? You just, oh God, or that's the end, or what are you thinking?
I probably was thinking that was kind of the end. I remember going into me job, because I was still working at the time, and apologising to my boss. I was like, I'm really sorry this has happened. And he was like, oh, don't worry about it, Chris, it's fine. Like, and I'd like fucking got myself all het up and to say it and all that type of stuff. And I don't know what, I just felt bad, to be honest with you. Because it wasn't just that, you know, I'd offended Chelsea fans. I'd offended people in Liverpool's own community as well. And, you know, the head of cop outs got in touch, and you know they weren't happy with me, and understandably so. And you know, I didn't realize it was a homophobic slur. Is the honest honest truth. Whether you choose to believe that or not, it's totally up to you. I was talking about I wanted to basically get across that Chelsea players were there for the money, and that was it. I said it in completely the wrong way.
Yeah,
and I used a homophobic slur, and I offended people, and I'm sorry about it. And it's 10 years ago.
Yeah, sorry to bring it up.
You know, but shit happens and shit changes.
You can use it as a positive now as well. That's the thing. I think because so you see what Klopp's done recently, when it a few years ago when he had the cop outs and he was speaking to members of the LGBTQ plus community and saying stop singing it. And then when you're on the cop, and I'm obviously the Pool fan as well, but you're on the cop, one or two people say it and they get told to shut up. Or better is that they just start singing Liverpool over it and it's done. So for stuff like that has to happen for change to happen. So in a way, it's not good for you. You're the person who's lost out the most of it, but in a way, it's been a catalyst for good things to happen, possibly.
Possibly. I don't think my video has been a catalyst for change, to be honest with you. I would disagree with that. I would say that, you know, my video was wrong, and 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years later, the change has happened, which is right.
Yeah,
it needed to happen. Whether my video was out or not, I still think that change would have happened, you know, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
you know, and the annoying thing for me is that I lose out on opportunities because of something that I said, because of essentially 7 seconds of words that I said 10 years ago.
Yeah,
and that frustrates me, but then equally I understand it at the same point. As an example, right, pretty much everybody in the Liverpool scene has been invited on to Liverpool's TV station. Never had an invite.
Yeah.
You know, there are loads of things where I've just not been invited to, where I probably would have under normal circumstances. And that's fine. Like, as I say, it was my mistake.
Is that why you said yes to this? Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. It's just nice to get asked, to be honest, to do things. And look, it is what it is. You know, the person who feels worse, Paul edited it and put it up. And he had the thought, should have cut that out at the beginning of the video.
Yeah.
And he thought, no, I won't. And so he feels probably worse than, or as bad as I do about it. Because
I'm sure there's been a lot of stuff that has been cut that would have been...
There's not been that much,
well,
you know.
Okay, well, not a lot. So that sounds bad on news. But you know what I mean? Like, sure, there's been decisions for stuff to be cut. Robson, and as you say...
Yeah, of course. So I think, you know, me and Paul have had loads of heart-to-hearts over the years about loads of different things. And I know he feels absolutely terribly about that. I don't blame him for it. I said it. There's no blame there for me, mate, and all that type of stuff. But it is hard, and I always feel like when these conversations are happening, I would like to be a part of them, but I'm too scared to be a part of it, because if I mention it, or if we play Chelsea, my face is all over the internet every single game.
Yeah.
And it's never, probably ever, going to stop that.
Well, you see it on Twitter, don't you? Yeah, before every Chelsea game, it's always one or two, and using it in a jokey way, probably still people who aren't understanding the bad
the
side
context
of the video.
People still say it to me when I walk down the street.
Yeah. All the funny time. Or is
yeah,
it,
like it's funny.
Right? Yeah.
Like, and I fucking cringe and like die inside every time someone says it to me and stuff like.
But I'm just going on it as well, because it was on the Redmen TV with you the other day. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
You were saying like you feel bad getting involved in the conversations about it. So like I was going to mention like what Jordan Henderson did in the last summer, going to Saudi Arabia, had a lot of people from the LGBTQ plus community saying that they thought they'd lost an ally and stuff like that. So when those topics come up, do you make a decision not to talk about them, or do you just feel like you can't talk about them?
I feel like I can't talk about them. I always will have my 2 cents worth because I'm a fool. but I feel terrible for saying it, because it's something that I don't really agree with, but it's all whataboutery, isn't it? And it's like, mate, I was 31 years old. I'm 41 now. I wasn't a dad. I was just married. I should have known better at the time, but I didn't. People change.
Yeah.
But like, I always feel when these conversations are happening, like, who's going to want to hear from me? You're just nothing else. You're the face of it.
Yeah.
You are the face of the homophobes. And that's really hard to take sometimes. Like I had a really bad couple of years around it all, to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever really said this on online and stuff. Like, anxiety about going to Chelsea games and, you know, open up the notifications on Twitter and just seeing all this stuff around, yeah. And it, as I say, it's been going on for 10 years now. I understand what's going to happen. It doesn't affect me anymore. Yeah. Thankfully, I've got a really strong circle of friends and family who I can talk to and stuff. But it did proper like send me west for a couple of years. Like,
it's important to talk about. Obviously, you said you did something wrong and you've had the repercussions from it. But obviously, for that impact to still be going on you can't qualify it by saying other people were saying it. But I was at the match at those times as well, and like, it was the whole of the cop was singing it at an era. And it would have been, if you go so many years ago, not saying in Anfield, just saying across England, there's monkey chants, there's whatever. Things get changed in football and things change in society. And moments like that probably have to be used. I know you're saying you don't think it changed it, and it's obviously changed more over time, but moments like that need to happen to say that's wrong, got pointed out, and then people know you can't do it. And obviously, I don't think it's fair on you that you had to go through all that, but it's maybe good that one person went through it so that it doesn't happen again, because now you know what's the backlash if you say it. Like, if I said something like that now and it got clipped up and went on, then you know what the repercussions are. So it's like, I don't really know what I'm saying, but it's just basically like, I feel bad for you, but it's probably been a positive in some way, if you think that or not.
Hopefully it's been a positive. As I say, I don't really think it has, but you, hopefully it has been a positive for somebody. You know, and it's just one of those things. Like, I mean, if I could run it back, I would completely change it, and I would never say those words. But I can't run it back. It's just got to accept what's happened, unfortunately.
Well, thank you for talking about it.
No problem.
I feel bad asking it, but I just think it's an important topic to touch on, and like, obviously being open about it's great, and obviously the repercussions here afterwards I don't think were fair, but yeah, thanks for sharing. We'll go to another quick break before we carry on with Chris, and thanks, see you in a second.
Hey, we're really running out of advertisers, so I'm advertising my own book, and this is the Tommy Lawrence book called Sweeper Keeper, Tommy Lawrence, the story of Liverpool and Scotland's flying pig. So Tommy Lawrence was a goalkeeper for Liverpool during the 60s under Bill Shankly, and this book comes out the 25th of March. I would love it if you bought it. As Kevin Keegan once said, I would love it. And this is the book. If anyone wants to buy this advertising space so I don't have to advertise myself, that's fine. But that's the book. These are the words. And Tom is going to read a very short extract from it now.
They were making no headway, and certainly were fortunate not to be marked down.
Right, buy the rest of the book and you'll see what happens. Thank you.
Right, welcome back. This is the Football Historian Podcast, so maybe it's about time we talk about some football history. So obviously, you know, we're going to have former players on, we're going to have fans on, people like yourself involved in fan media and stuff, but obviously the crux of this, I think, at the moment, until it all changes in episode 4, but the crux of it is to talk about football history, and we'll go on later to talk, maybe settle some debates, but if we go on your football history, what you think of your first game or your first relationship with football, what's like the first football memory you have?
That's not a good one, you know. It's 1989, it's Hillsborough.
Right.
I would have been 7 at the time. I remember sitting on and watching it on the telly in the living room, and my dad was out, and I thought he was there, but he wasn't. He was just at the pub with his mates. And I just remember those scenes, obviously, as a young lad, they're the sort of things that stay with you, you know what I mean? And so I think that's my first one. The first game I went to, I think it was 1992, we beat Bristol Rovers, I think it was 2-1, in an FA Cup replay, I think it was. So that's a big one. And then I was actually at the last game of the Cop as well. My dad took me to the Norwich game where Jeremy Gosse scored an absolute pearler. And we lost that one. I think it was 1-0 in that game. So they're my sort of earlier memories and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, playing football around Liverpool and everything else, you know, you're obsessed with it, aren't you? Everything we did, like, I look at what my kids do now, and like with a lot of with iPads and playing with toys and stuff like that. All me and my mates did, me and two Blues, Stu Williams and Craig Milton, all we did was draw football kits constantly over and over, and footballs and you know, collect match cards and shoot cards and sticker books when they came in. And that was, we were just completely and utterly football obsessed, like, to the point where my mate Shuey actually is a designer for Mitre and designs football kits and footballs now.
Which is a mad thing.
Better than yours, oh, they were miles better than mine. Like, he was absolutely brilliant at them. That's all we did.
Yeah.
And you know, everything was just all about footy. Then it was, you know, Championship Manager when that come out and all that. And just, and then just through life, it's almost, it's always been there, hasn't it? You've always, like, almost every, like, big thing that happens in your life, you think about it, but you also think about what Liverpool were doing at the time.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, like, yeah, it's just mad how it's always there right next to where you are at all the big occasions.
Yeah. So, yeah, and well, I don't know about your missus, but mine certainly is annoyed about how much it is there for every moment that I experience. Yep. And you judge everything by, and you can't book a weekend in more than 3 weeks in advance. She, you're even worse working.
She hates it, my missus. Like, but like, equally, I'm actually really glad that she doesn't like football, because you need that sort of escapism at times, don't you? You need that sort of something different to talk about in your life and stuff, especially when we do Red Men and all you do is talk about football all the time. So to come home and not talk about football is actually quite nice.
Yeah. Well, my missus is a blue, so she doesn't want to talk about football either, but
yeah,
I mean, reasons, yeah, but yeah, we won't go into that. Obviously, just again, you said about going the match at Bristol Rovers was your first one. Was it that you went often when you were younger, or how often?
No, not really, to be honest with you. Like, my brother's an Evertonian, I'm a Liverpoolian, my dad's a Liverpoolian. My brother was always a pain in the arse and hated life, so that's why he's an Evertonian, I think. But... So we used to, like, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, to be frank. We'd go when my mum and dad had money. My mum hasn't been able to work since the 80s because of a bad back since before I was born and stuff. My dad was a panel beater, so just, you know, painted and spray cars. I say just, it's a sound job, but we didn't have a lot of money because of it. So we'd go whenever we could, really, and he'd always, like, take me and Ste to an Everton game and then return the favour. Obviously Ste and me then to a Liverpool game and stuff like that. So it wasn't probably until I was like probably 15 when I got my own first job, which was obviously illegal at the time, but I got a job at 15 when I actually had the money to start going to football matches properly. So that would have been like 97. 98.
And then that's when you feel like proper part of it, or did that not change before when you weren't going? Or...
No, I mean, obviously it just wasn't on the telly as much, was it? Yeah. So obviously, you know, it was all about reading the Liverpool Echo. It was like where my Twitter name came from was the Blood Red column.
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying it was Bascombs in the 90s. So that's where I got my Twitter name from when I had the Twitter account. I was like, oh, Mr. Blood Red, yeah, I love that Blood Red column growing up and stuff. So it was all like every day you'd read the Echo, you'd do back pages and read absolutely everything. Then you get your magazines once a month or once every couple of weeks whenever they're out. And so, but yeah, as far as going to the games, just wasn't on the telly. It was obviously you'd watch Match of the Day and all that type of stuff. Yeah. Like, but you couldn't follow it in the way you can nowadays, could you?
Yeah, well, but yeah, fortunately it wasn't... most of the stuff I've been able to see, and obviously I'm lucky enough I go to the match every week as well, but I think I'm sure you feel similar. Obviously with your job you have to do it, but I can feel if you miss a second of it I get a burn inside. I remember once on the way back from playing footy before the derby when I think Coutinho scored in the first few minutes, we went to the Jolly Miller and we pulled up as the goal went in, and like I felt gutted that we scored because I'd missed it. That's my problem, is I have to be involved in it. But like, yeah, that's probably says more about me than anything else. But if we go on, maybe a favourite game you've been to. I know you've obviously been to a lot, but being there, what's the best game that you've...
I mean, this won't surprise anybody to say Barcelona, will it? Of course, in the Champions League semi-final. But there's quite a few games that I'd put up with it. I won't bore everyone with the Barcelona story. I'm sure if you get Liverpool fans over the years, everyone will talk about it. But like, I absolutely love the Dortmund one.
Well, I was going to say, actually, you were asked 7 years ago on a Reddit Ask Me Anything Red Men TV thing, and you said the Dortmund game meant. So I was going to say, obviously, that one meant a lot.
It really did. 7 years ago, that Ask Me Anything was it? Yeah. I remember that. We had to have a photo with our at on to make sure that everyone knew that it was real. That was spine tingling, that atmosphere. And I think, you know, because I worked in restaurants all my life, me and my dad shared a season ticket from, say, I think it was about 2002 we got our season ticket and we shared that. But I would miss a lot of the night games. like the only games I would really be able to work, so I used to work like 70 hours a week in restaurants and as a chef and then a manager and stuff, was like the Monday night games and stuff like that, really. Obviously, you know, the occasional, very occasional sort of half 12 on a Saturday game I might be able to get to, but mostly I worked late nights and stuff. So I missed all like the 2005 run of games in terms of going to them and stuff like that. So the Dortmund one was the first one where I felt that electricity in the air.
Yeah.
That like something that, like, I'm not a spiritual person, I'm not a religious person, but it felt different, and it felt like there was an energy around, which I've only felt on a handful of occasions at football matches. That was the first time, so it was special for me.
Yeah,
because people will talk about the Chelsea semi-final, wasn't there? Didn't experience it. That Dortmund one for me, like, when you consider, am I right in saying that was the day we signed Virg? Oh no, that was the Burnley game. I was going to say, I'm going to talk about that later. So in that game, it was Sacco and
Lovren,
the two centre halves, wasn't it?
What a partnership!
They scored the third and the fourth goals in that one, didn't they? And obviously, you go 2-0 down early doors. I think it was like the first 10 minutes we were 2-0 down.
I remember saying before, I was like, my dad's like, how do you think it's going to go? And obviously, it's, you know, walk alone. And I said, I'm looking forward to the first 10 minutes because I know that'll be good. And the rest that we've had, then we were like 2-0 down.
2-0
like,
down.
Didn't even enjoy the first 10 minutes.
And then I think it goes 2-1, 3-1.
Yeah,
and then it's 3-2-3 all,
4-3.
And it was just bonkers, wasn't it? Because it was Coutinho, I think, and then Sacco, and then...
I think Origi got the second, was it? Sacco, and then
Lovren at the end.
Yeah.
Because I know Origi got one. I thought he got the first, but you might be right.
I don't know. Whatever, but yeah.
I think you probably are right, because my memory's awful for this type of stuff. So, and that one for me was like... And then I think about the Burnley game, which was the day that Virgil van Dijk signed, and yet it was Clavan, the goal scorer. New Year's Day.
Yes, I do remember
Clavan.
That.
I think on like the day Virgil signed, Clavan scores like that last minute winner and stuff. Like, it was insane, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like,
so you had that one.
I was at that one, And that was like, cause I think we were 1-0 up, and they scored in like the 88th, and it went 1-1. And then Clavan scored to go 2-1. So that's another wild one for me that was just...
Yeah,
like,
that's the game, though. I think it's the one... I think it's hard to ask that question unless you have one, but I think that's the best game that doesn't really mean anything, but feels like great to be there. Like, it's like even like the... When you look at the West Brom one, Klopp doing the arms and stuff like that. Like, that was a draw, but the way that the atmosphere was at the end there was like...
And what it meant for the future as
well. It felt like the start of the story. So, like, games like that, obviously, they mean more to you, don't they?
Bayern Munich away as well, by the way.
Sorry, yeah.
Bayern Munich away. Yeah, oh, my God. Like, I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to... I went to every away game that season in Europe, but didn't go to the final, which hurt. But that Bayern Munich one was, like, special, mate.
Was that Porto season as well?
I think we did them 2 years on the bounce, didn't we?
Was that like that 5-0? Was that year? Was it Kiev year or Madrid year?
It was Madrid year. I went to the Kiev final.
Yeah.
I went to the Baal final against Sevilla. I went to the Paris final.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I missed Madrid.
That was the best one. I was at that one, if that helps.
Does that help? It might make me feel worse than the chat we had earlier.
Yeah, that was at the wall. I think Kiev was the best player. We'll digress, because obviously just what happened around it. But I was going to say, top five players you've seen play for Liverpool in
all. Oh, we can man. Do that. Okay.
I'm guessing...
In an order?
If you don't mind. I'm guessing Gerrard is going to be in amongst the top, but you'll... obviously your top.
Let me write. Okay, so guaranteed in there in no order to begin with: Gerrard, Suarez, Salah, Fowler.
Van Dijk, Alisson, Torres.
No.
Carragher.
Carragher's a personal favourite, but he's not one of the best five.
Yeah. Hippie.
No.
Alonso.
No, I think he was overrated for us. I think he did his best work at other clubs. Salah.
One or five?
No, wait. Okay. Gerrard, Salah.
Suarez.
Fowler. And. Van Dijk's gonna end it. So they're me five in order.
You said Gerrard first.
Gerrard's first. Suarez is second. Salah's third. Van Dijk's fourth. Fowler's fifth.
That's a good one. And if I can ask you.
Close my eyes.
I know it is hard to do. But it's mad how much football you're watching and you reflect on it, but you don't actually know that. And I'm having a go at you. It's mad how it's so hard to think when you watch that much football. And then if I can do the same five again who haven't played for Liverpool.
Zidane, Del Piero. Nice. I was a massive Del Piero fan.
Yeah.
R9, Ronaldo is there. Definitely.
Messi.
He's good, but is he? No, he's good. I've seen him play as well. Good? Obviously, yeah, Messi's got to be in there, hasn't he? And I'm.
Ronaldo.
Cristiano. No.
Okay.
Not a chance. No. Never.
Better than Del Piero. Del Piero's better than Ronaldo.
I loved watching Del Piero. That's, you know,
I'm just
I loved just it's not like, look, listen, this is my.
Oh yeah, all five. I'm not holding you to it.
And then I want to say Paolo Maldini.
Nice. I won't make you older then, but yeah, there's a lot of Serie A.
I loved Serie A in the 90s, the Channel 4 stuff. I was obsessed with it. It was my favourite footy at the time. Yeah. Like, I loved it. I liked the defensive sort of tactical side of the game and stuff like that. So, yeah, in there. Funny enough, like, Matthias Sammer even popped into my head at one point there. I was like, there's no way Matthias Sammer can get into your top five, Chris.
He goes six.
Yeah, he could have got a nod for him. Like, just some mad German sweeper, libero. But they're the ones. Like Totti as well. I loved watching Francesco Totti.
Enjoying watching them, that's the difference. When they're not your player as well, like, you don't need them to be tracking back and doing stuff. You just want them to score a scream in every other game, don't you?
Figo's there or thereabouts as well for me. Absolutely loved watching Figo play. Maldini was the best defender I've ever seen.
Better than Van Dijk.
Until I saw Van Dijk.
Right, okay. Well, before we do the... we'll go to another quick break before the last section where we're going to try and settle some of the biggest debates in football, which is kind of the idea I've got at the moment. But yes, we'll go to a quick break and we'll see you soon. Hello, this is the Football Estonian podcast. We have a Patreon. Basically, you get to see a lot of stuff for free, but if you could pay, it'd be better for me. But I'm going to tell you why you should do that. So, the first 100 people, Tom, it's £1 a month. You tell me what you can buy for £1.
Absolutely nothing.
I bet you could buy about 8 flumps.
3 Freddos at current market rate.
Or, go back in the day, many Freddos. But let's not talk about that. We're not bothered about history here at the Football Estonian podcast. We talk about facts and we talk about what's happening right now. Please, if you can afford it, become a patron. The first 100 patrons get it for £1 a month. Ridiculous.
If you don't buy it, Pete can't move out this garage.
I can't move out the garage. But everyone after the first 100, it's £3 a month minimum. Goes up to 5, goes up to 10. If you want to pay a tenner a month, I think you might be crazy. But I would really appreciate your support. And the whole thing, the whole reason we're doing this, is that I love football. I love football history. And I spent a lot of money on these lights that you can't see and these mics that you can hear us speaking from. But the reason we're doing it is because this is something that I love and I enjoy. And if you want to support me, Tom, Rick, and everyone else who's behind the camera, I would really appreciate it if you become a Patreon and you will help my dream become a reality.
Ta-da.
The debate.
Welcome back. The final section with our first ever guest, Chris. Thank you again for coming.
No problem. It's all really kind of you.
So this is the debate. So the idea here is that we answer some of the biggest debates in football history.
Gerrard.
Yeah, so it was Gerrard or Van Dijk. Now, so the first one, I think just a classic for certainly, I think, any football fan, not even say this generation, just any football fan gets asked this question. And obviously, there's going to be a little bias, but I also agree with your answer to it, in that it's Gerrard, Lampard or Scholes. And maybe, even if you don't pick your favourite, who would be second?
Oh, mate, by a mile, Scholes is my second.
Okay.
I get really, like... I can't believe the debate is really Gerrard or Lampard. Like, Scholes was miles better footballer than Frank Lampard was.
Yeah.
Like, he was brilliant. Gerrard's the answer. Gerrard was the best. Gerrard could do things that the others couldn't.
Yeah.
And Gerrard could do everything that the others could. That's the difference for me.
Yeah.
Gerrard could arrive late and score goals if the team allowed him to. He's had those seasons where he was playing as a 10 and stuff 10, like that, yeah. Like Frank Lampard. Gerrard sat back and run games like Paul Scholes. Gerrard's done both of those roles within one shit team. Gerrard was by far and away the best footballer, but next is by far and away Paul Scholes. Frank Lampard, for me, was a very good footballer, but also he excelled because the team allowed him to excel. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying he's not a great player, but he's not on the level of the other two. Paul Scholes was unbelievable. Back when, you know, I think when I was growing up, I used to watch England. I'm not afraid to say that. But, like, Paul Scholes was amazing for England as well. But what he did, I remember when he retired and then he came back and they still won the league, but they were so different without him.
Sports Direct boots and all that stuff.
Oh, mate, yeah. he was a player, like, and he could see the game, Paul Scholes. So, yeah, I just think, I get really angry with that debate. The Scholes actually get disrespected the most because he was by far and away better than Lampard. Who was it for you?
I'd say same order, to be honest. I agree. I think Lampard's a great player, but I think it's what peers say about Scholes is what makes it clear that he's so good. Like, his teammates and people like Zidane and all that, and Xavi and Iniesta, and said stuff they wish they could have played with him. I think they know a lot more about football than I do, so I think for them to say that. And then, yeah, I think Carragher said as well about Gerrard, and I've probably said this a million times because I'm thinking of asking, but I think Carragher said there's no way that Paul Scholes would have won Liverpool the European Cup in Istanbul. That, again, it doesn't mean they're a bad player just because even if you're Lampard, you're third in this tier that we've been there. You're not exactly a bad player if you're behind Scholes and Gerrard. But yeah, it's comfortably going to be Gerrard, I think, for me. We do another one, maybe go a bit further back. Again, I think this one's hard for people who weren't similar ages and whatever, who didn't see them live, but Pelé or Maradona, just from what you know.
I think Pelé. From what I know, obviously, I remember Maradona more, and this is not a slight on him as a footballer, but I remember Maradona from 1994 and being that absolute cokehead in USA 94.
Yeah.
So for me, that tarnished whatever he was, and obviously, you know, hand of God and all that type of stuff. But it's the same way probably why John Barnes didn't make my top five when we're talking about Liverpool players. Because if you ask someone who's maybe born a generation before me, even 5 or 10 years, John Barnes would be in that top five.
Yeah.
But I remember John Barnes as a centre midfielder for the 90s Liverpool side.
Bit, yeah.
And so for me, from what I've never seen the videos of Pelé being crap, but I've watched Diego Maradona being crap.
Right, yeah. So you've got more access to
it. It's not you, therefore it's Pelé. And also from the videos that I've seen, Pelé was marvellous.
Yeah.
Not to surprise anybody here.
I think, yeah, was scoring World Cup winning goals at 16. That is crazy, isn't it, really? And even if he did lie about the 1,000 goals he scored.
Well, he scored them. I think that's the debate, isn't it? Yeah. About who he was playing against.
Played six aside, yeah. But I think as well, like for Santos, like, took him around the way he was, like, he was an example of football to the whole world, and like, you're playing friendlies and everything, like, that is mad, isn't it? Like, obviously Maradona's playing Napoli, winning the league with them and playing for Barcelona and stuff. But I think for Pelé to be the face of football, and, like, you know, whether you agree with FIFA or not,
he changed,
like,
the game.
Yeah, I went to name a stadium in every country after him, stuff like that shows his impact.
It doesn't, he's the first real fella who went over to do the MLS thing, wasn't he, and try and sort of restart that. And how many players have tried to do that? And you know, you're following in one of the great footsteps there. Messi's literally treading that path right now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of him, and I don't know what your answer's going to be to this one because you've already said it before, but Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Yeah.
All day.
I feel like that's going to be a Lampard one, but I feel like I have to ask it because some people don't agree. If you is there any instance or anything that you think Ronaldo is better than Messi at, other than maybe head?
Yeah, I think what you've got to give Cristiano Ronaldo is that he worked for it. He shouldn't really be in the debate with Messi. Like, he just shouldn't. It should be Messi versus Pelé versus Maradona, maybe.
Yeah.
Messi's skill set is unrivaled. No one's ever come close, and no one, I don't think, ever will come close to Lionel Messi. But it's like, it's no disrespect to Jamie Carragher, by the way. Jamie Carragher is one of my favourite Liverpool players. Him and Fowler were the two when I was growing up that I absolutely adored. And why I always sort of, I love Fowler, but there's a special place in my heart why Carragher was my favourite player is because he really shouldn't have been. And he worked so hard to be able to get there. And, you know, he almost gave Liverpool fans, like, if you work hard, you can do what you want.
Yeah, he's one of you on the pitch type thing.
Yeah, and that was it. Like, and just seeing him come through, obviously, as a midfielder and then a left-back and then play centre-back and achieve what he achieved in the game was, it was amazing. And so I think Ronaldo had that work ethic that Jamie Carragher had to be better than he was and to constantly improve. Now, obviously, he was born with a pretty high skill level, but not on the same level as Messi. So to even get in the conversation, I think, was amazing for him.
Yeah, but he's second. Yeah.
But he's miles second.
Well, I think maybe a more interesting one is who is after them two. If they're the best players of the last 20 years, which I think isn't a bad argument to have, maybe you disagree with Ronaldo being there, but who is the other one after them?
I always thought Ronaldo was better than Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah. And I still do. I think Zidane was the best player of his generation by a country mile. I absolutely adored watching Zizou. He'd still be in those conversations, but for a headbutt in a World Cup final about the best players to ever do it. In terms of the last sort of 10 years, I think Suarez was it. I think Suarez was playing at the level of those two.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to remember the season that he played at Liverpool, but what he achieved actually in Barcelona for like the next 3 or 4 years was unrivaled as well. Like, he was scoring 50 goals a season.
And he's similar to Zidane in that there's the hawk sides that ruin your legacy, don't they? But yeah, I think, as you say, for what he did at Liverpool and at Barcelona alongside Messi and shining nearly as bright as him, I think is amazing. I ask you one other thing, the greatest team ever, and I'll do the greatest Liverpool team and the greatest non-Liverpool team for you, but I mean as in, like, you know, if you said 2005 Istanbul, which obviously isn't, because I don't think Jimmy Traore is going to be, but if you, who's the best team that you've seen, Liverpool and non-Liverpool?
I think the best team that I've seen at Liverpool was the one that won the Champions League and finished the point behind Manchester City.
So that's 2018-19.
Okay. I think that was the best Liverpool team that we've had.
That the one that played one game together, that famous that pitch in it because of injuries, but like obviously the squad was strong. But,
yeah. I think just what they. Oh, is that what you mean? The actual best 11?
No. Just like, I know it's that season, but I'm saying that I'm just that man that everyone knows it, that they only played one game together, the actual best 11, which is crazy, but. Yeah,
I think that sort of crossover between 18-19 and 19-20 was that the season when we won like 102 out of 106 points or something? Like, it's probably a meld between the two.
Season and a half, yeah.
Yeah, that they were like unrivaled for me, and unfortunately they weren't unrivaled because Manchester City pipped them somehow to a Premier League title. Non-Liverpool, I'd probably say that Man City.
Yeah, the same era. Yeah. So who's that up front for them? Was that still Aguero?
Still Aguero.
And obviously De Bruyne.
I think David Silva was probably involved as well as Bernardo Silva.
And then they got Edison and
company
Walker and company.
Like, I think it's hard, isn't it? Because like that Milan side of 2005 would come into it for me.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. That
that's like a who's who of the best football players that have ever lived, almost, isn't it? You know, you got Jaap Stam in there, you got Hernan Crespo. I mean, it was Paolo Maldini.
He's the worst player, and he's not even bad.
And he doesn't have to do anything for the most part either, because they're just so good. Like, it was just incredible, wasn't it, that side? But these modern sides are better than the old sides, so. Yeah.
I don't say that too much on the Football Historian podcast, but
no, but you can be the best of a generation, can't you? And
well, it's like the Barcelona team. I thought might get a mention, like, you know, the beat United when they obviously
they were good.
All academy
they were
stuff.
Boring, but they were good. And it's the same with the Man City side. Yeah. They were boring, but they were good.
It's a winning machine, and that's what it is.
I was thinking, like,
Guardiola manages both underneath. But
I know it's the Football Historian podcast, and you know we can look back
it's
fondly, right? But the 100-meter record has always been broken,
yeah,
and will always be broken Because people get better.
Yeah.
Because evolution.
Yeah.
Because, you know, new ways of training, new ways of new equipment, running shoes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
These records, you might think they'll never get broken. Just look at all athletics. They always get broken.
Yeah.
So and that's what happens. And it's the same with football. It's just, but it gets better and better.
Those players are in the modern era. That's the argument.
And that's totally right.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
So they achieved what they could achieve.
Yeah.
And they only beat what was in front of them. And if they'd been born today, they might be better than the Man City. If that AC Milan side had all been born today, in 25 years' time, I guarantee they'll be better than the Man City side. But
yeah,
they weren't.
Yeah, so you can't, yeah. Well, that's it. And it's all quantifying factors, the balls, the boots, the pitch and everything. But yeah.
Sports science.
Yeah. But then, yeah, I suppose those City and Liverpool teams aren't better now than they were 3-4 years.
I don't think they are. It does always change.
Well, I think that's mainly my debate. I think, was there any others?
I'm sorry if I've ended the football podcast with my point there.
That's right. We'll do one quick last one then. The greatest manager that you think in football history. We'll end on that.
Oh, God. The greatest manager in football history. That is so hard, isn't it? I mean, the first one that springs to mind is Bob Paisley. Obviously Bill Shankly's at the back of my mind as well, but what Bob did in his few years in charge was, it shouldn't have happened. And he shouldn't have been able to. We've seen so many times now, haven't we, how many times you follow a manager like a Bill Shankly or a Alex Ferguson or an Arsene Wenger and it doesn't happen. Bob might be the only manager that's ever been able to do it,
yeah,
which is wild.
I think just the lack of an ego is what made him do it as well, wasn't it? Because like everyone who comes in probably thinks, I need to do it, change everything. And he was just so laid back, was just like, okay, yeah, yeah, I'll take over this team. And frankly, he went 6-7 years without winning the trophy as well, which so many people forget. And then Bob Paisley just walks in. Obviously, Shankly left them a pretty good team to go and play with, but then he took them on to another level. And you see how distraught people are when the likes of Ferguson and the likes of Wenger go, well, maybe not Wenger, Arsenal fans were celebrating, but you see when that happens, and then just to take all that in your stride and win consistently, that is amazing. But yeah, Bob Paisley's echoes. Yeah, I feel like Alex Ferguson.
Him in the modern game. What do you reckon he could achieve?
Well, he didn't train, did he? That's the thing.
Nah,
it's just, yeah, we just turned up and kicked the ball against the wall and then played six aside against the coaches. It's
crazy.
Yeah, but maybe he would be found out, you don't know. But we don't know. That's the thing. But yeah, that is the end of episode one of the Football Historian podcast. We'll look back on this one day and think, wow, we need more lights. A better camera and everything, but maybe not camera, but better setup. But I do really appreciate you.
No problem at all, mate.
For day one, and hopefully it hasn't frozen. We'd have to do all this again.
Fingers crossed.
And yeah, thanks very much for joining us, Chris. Where can people
reach you? Redmen TV, mate. If you're interested in talking about Liverpool Football Club, I'm interested in talking about it to you. Yeah.
Thanks very much for watching. I'm sure some sort of social thing will be here afterwards. And thanks very much. See you next time.